Blog Talk Radio.
An all-access football exclusive.
Welcome, everybody, to another edition of College Football Insiders Radio. I'm your host, Daniel Moglione, and stay with us here on the Fantasy Sports Channel. We want to keep you here talking some college football. Remember, if you want to learn about these guys heading into your fantasy draft next season, you got to listen right now and get ready. Learn all these names. Learn what's going on. You know, a guy like Dez Bryant suddenly, hey, everybody thought he was going to leave early, but now that's looking more and more like that's the case. He's the guy you may want to draft in your fantasy draft next season. So stay with us. We have a packed show. We're going to take a quick look at last week's games, mostly focusing on the upcoming weekend, week 6 in college football. Joining me live today will be Tim Hiller, quarterback of Western Michigan, one of the top young MAC quarterbacks. And if you don't know, the MAC is well known for producing quarterbacks. You should know. We're talking Ben Roethlisberger. We're talking Byron Leftwich. We're talking Chad Pennington, and along with Dan LeFever. So there's more to come. Very well-known conference producing quarterbacks. Also joining me, I'll have a tape recording of Desmond Howard from ESPN, former Heisman Trophy winner, former Super Bowl MVP. We talk a little bit about his playing days, the current Wolverines, some Miami Hurricanes football, what he thinks has been a difference for them. And we talk a little game day last week at Boston College. Mark Herzlich, really, really unique game day. You know, not the biggest game in college football, but, you know, a kid that is recovering from cancer, Ewing's cancer is what he had in the bone, and he's about 90% cancer, doctors say. So phenomenal story. Desmond talked about that, as well as giving his take on the upcoming game, LSU against Florida, the big game of the week, number 4 in the country against number 1 in the country, both undefeated in the SEC. That's where game day is going to be this week. Now, he doesn't give a prediction, but from what he says on the game, you can pretty much figure out. And we also asked Desmond, who did he root for on Monday night? Did he root for Brett Favre, his old quarterback, or did he root for the Green Bay Packers? Did he root for the uniform? So he'll let us in on that answer. So let's get into the show. It looks like this is becoming a reoccurring theme here. Listening, you know, me starting off with a little rant, a little peeve of mine that I had. And last week's was that call on A.J. Green, the excessive celebration in the end zone after the kid scored. If you did not watch this game, this was LSU, who is playing again in the big game this week against the Gators. Last week, they were not at home in Baton Rouge. They were in Athens between the hedges, taking on Georgia. And they had shut down the Bulldogs for 3 quarters. Georgia finally cracked in the end zone, found the end zone in the 4th quarter. The score was at that time 12-7 with LSU on top. Georgia's moving the football. And, you know, A.J. Green had a decent day, not the best day in the world for him. Great matchup. Patrick Peterson, corner on LSU, even though he's just a sophomore and he might not be the household name on the LSU team, but Patrick Peterson might turn out to be the best pro player on that LSU squad. They went back and forth, you know, all game long, mano a mano with A.J. Green. And to me, that was just fun to watch, just to focus on those two guys going at it, two kids that are going to be playing on Sundays before we know it, a pair of true sophomores. So we're going to have to wait another season for that. But, you know, no doubt about it, they're going to be high picks, probably first-round picks. Well, A.J. Green did not have Patrick Peterson covering him on this particular play. He was along the sideline in the end zone, and the quarterback basically just threw it up there. He was covered by Chris Hawkins, the other corner, but A.J. Green is just so athletic at 6'4", and he's got such a big vertical leap. I mean, this kid got a basketball scholarship to Syracuse, so if Jim Boeheim wants you to play basketball, you could probably ball a little bit. So, and he just went up and nabbed the football, snagged it, a la Randy Moss, put the Gators up, you know, put the Bulldogs up with a minute 44 left in the game. And you know what? You know what happened? He got happy. He was happy about it. I dare to say he was ecstatic even. He celebrated, and he did not call attention to himself. He immediately looked for teammates. He was mobbed by his teammates. And for some reason, unbeknownst to anybody but the official who took out the hanky from his back pocket and threw it onto the grass between the hedges, he was psyched for excessive celebration, and it was just utterly ridiculous. Now, listen, I understand we don't want these college kids whipping out cell phones like T.O. and, you know, doing their Chad Johnson impersonations on the field. Nobody wants to see that. But he didn't taunt the opposing team. He did not call attention to himself. He celebrated with his teammate. There was nothing at all excessive about it. It was a celebration, nothing at all excessive about it. And, you know, it didn't end the game right there. Obviously, it was still a minute 44 left. It didn't give LSU points. It didn't take points away from Georgia. Georgia could have done a better job on the kickoff. They gave LSU great field position. They could have done a better job on defense. They didn't have to let Charles Scott rumble in from 33 yards out for a touchdown. None of that happened directly because of the flag. But to act as if the flag was meaningless would be a little ridiculous as well. The flag definitely had an impact on the game and how that drive went. You think if LSU didn't start at the Georgia 38-yard line, they would have run back-to-back plays needing to score to win the game? I seriously doubt it. So that, you know, that's something that would not have happened. It changed the outcome of the game, and it's just something I hope we don't, you know, see again. It's a little ridiculous, especially sometimes you see certain players show unbelievable amount of emotion, celebrating, you know, greatly in that conference with no flag at all. You know, so let's just be consistent and let's be smart. Let's be smart. Let's use some common sense at the end of the games. Let's not inject ourselves into the games if you are the official. Now, the two other big stories this week, most recently was yesterday, and that's when we learned that Dez Bryant has been suspended by the NCAA and is considered right now ineligible to play this season. That is star receiver Dez Bryant, arguably the top receiver in the country, a potential top 10 pick coming up. Apparently, he had lunch with Deion Sanders and lied to the NCAA about it. Oklahoma State is going to, you know, challenge this, and they're going to try to stick up for their guy and try to see if they can get him back. But as of now, he's been ruled ineligible. That's a big loss, a huge loss. You know, their top player, and we're talking about a team that could challenge for the top 10. They're just on the outside right now. They got big games coming up this season. They're taking on Oklahoma, their rival. They're taking on the Texas Longhorns, who could be competing for a national championship. Texas has to go to Stillwater this year, so that could be a big loss if Dez isn't able to play. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. You know, as I said, OSU said in a statement released to the press that they're taking a step because he failed to openly discuss this with the NCAA, interaction with a former NFL player not affiliated with OSU. Dez Bryant said in the statement, "I made a mistake by not entirely being truthful when meeting with the NCAA. I sincerely regret my mistake and apologize to my teammates, coaches, OSU fans, and the NCAA. Mike Gundy said, "We're certainly disappointed, but we are moving forward as we would with any challenge during the season." And, you know, folks, if you guys want to get this kind of breaking news, you got to sign up right now and go to twitter.com, go to our website, that is twitter.com/CFB Insiders, College Football Insider, CFB Insiders, and you will get this kind of breaking news. I mean, you can go back and check the logs, but I'm pretty sure that we had that up there before anybody else had that up there. As soon as that release was out, within seconds, that was posted on our Twitter as well as our website, NFL Draft Bible. Other interesting news since we last spoke was the news regarding LeGarrette Blount, the running back. That's a little older news, but it's still new news in terms of our I haven't really gotten a chance to give my take on that. Listen, I think it's fine. I didn't have a problem with LeGarrette's suspension when he was suspended for the entire year. At the same time, you know, part of me did feel it was a little harsh. Like I said, I didn't have a huge problem with it. I probably wouldn't give him the whole year. I thought it was a little harsh. I hope they don't go soft and give him like one game, two games. I was thinking half the season would be appropriate. And if he returns on the date they mentioned in early November, he would have missed 7 games. And interestingly enough, very fair by the university, is he will also miss the USC game. Had they given him the opportunity to come back 1 week earlier, they could have gotten him back to play USC in a game that could end up deciding the Pac-10 conference. But instead, they did not do that. They're going to make him wait an extra week, and he's going to have to do all the right things. So I think this is good. This should be what college football is about. He's a kid. He did something terrible, something that he should not repeat. Hopefully, this is a lesson for him to learn for this season, to learn for the future in the NFL. Who knows? He may end up being a better young man, a better football player because of what happened and learning this lesson. So if he does all the right things and he earns his way back onto the team, I have zero problem with that. Bring him back, let him play. You know, let's do it. I'm all for that. You know, for more college football news, as I said, you can always check Twitter, join that. It's twitter.com/collegefootballinsiders. And from there, you know, that'll update you on any of my thoughts. I'll be there all Saturday during the games from noon to midnight, as I like to say, checking out the games. And also, you know, go to our website, www.nfldraftbible.com. We have college football news coming in nonstop. You know, today we have an article on the Notre Dame Fighting Irish. Where are they headed? They have a bye this week, but what do they need to do to succeed? What do they need to do to get over the hump? They're 4-1, and they're unranked, which is kind of, you know, it's a little different. You know, typically when Notre Dame shows any signs of life, they immediately jump in the polls, but not this year. The pollsters are being a little hesitant. They had them in early on, and I guess that loss to Michigan wearied people on the Irish not to jump back on the bandwagon too quickly. So our Michigan man is, our Notre Dame man is focusing on that, and he's letting you know what three things they have to do to kind of right that ship and get where they want to go. And we know what that destination is. It's a BCS bowl game, a big bucks BCS bowl game. We also have, if you go to NFLDraftBible.com, click on the College Football Insider slide in our slideshow, and you'll have all our columns from the start of the season, from the preseason, in fact, up until today. We had on-location interviews from University of South Florida with B.J. Daniels, Carlton Mitchell, and Craig Marshall, three key players in South Florida's quick start. And we have our takes on several topics as well as updates on what the players are doing in terms of the awards. Are you listening to College Football Insiders Radio? I'm your host, Daniel Mobione. Thank you for joining me on Fantasy Sports Channel. Thanks for having us on the Fantasy Sports Channel. Don't forget to check out www.fsc.fm for all the news regarding the Fantasy Sports Channel. And as I said at the top, we will have Desmond Howard on the show later on. We will also have our Super Scout, Kelron Six, who will be talking about the upcoming games this weekend. And in a couple of minutes, we're waiting for Tim Hiller to call in, quarterback from Western Michigan. You might not be that familiar with him, but the kid can throw the football. He's been a successful passer for a couple of years now for Western Michigan in the MAC conference. He's maybe a little overshadowed by Dan LeFevre, but that doesn't mean he's not a big-time quarterback in his own right. They are 2-3 right now. They're coming off a loss against Northern Illinois, have a big game coming up this weekend at Toledo. Mr. Hiller is already thrown for 1,231 yards and 8 touchdowns this season, and on his career has 9,311 yards and 84 touchdowns. So as I said, he's a stat sheet stuffer that could throw the football, and he'll be dialing in any minute now. And if you want to call in, feel free, pick up the phone. The number is 347-945-6275. That's 347-945-6275. I look forward to hearing to your questions and comments as well if you have time. Now, you know, it's an interesting week. I think an interesting team to watch is and follow is the Auburn Tigers, who are now 5-0 undefeated. They're a team that jumped into the top 25 this week. And to see how they do, you know, are they back? Is Gene Chizik brought? I almost feel bad saying that. Are they back? I mean, that's not. I should correct myself, because that's not fair to Tommy Tuberville, who did a pretty darn good job with Auburn, including, you know, not too long ago having them undefeated in the SEC, going 13-0 in SEC play, and he got jobbed out of being a national championship game because it turned out to be Oklahoma and USC facing off 1-2 in the country. They were both undefeated at the same time, and, you know, it's kind of unfair the fact that Auburn didn't get there. If he had a national championship under his belt, I seriously doubt he'd be fired right now, but, you know, that's how it goes. But they did have a rough year last year. There's no doubt about that. The Tigers were disappointing. A lot of people had them in the top 10 and had high expectations of them, including ourselves. We thought they would do very well last year. So and it got kind of messy with the offensive coordinator situation there, and that's been resolved. But, you know, the question is, are they for real? Are they really back to being a top challenger team? I'm not so sure myself, to be honest. I think I'm still going to play a wait-and-see. when it comes to Auburn. It'll be interesting to see how they do this week. They go to Arkansas, a team that's 0-2 in SEC play, but has a pretty explosive offense, which we saw last week when they just blitzed the Texas A&M Aggies on a neutral field. They play on Jerry Jones' brand new stadium there in Dallas. So, you know, that's going to be a challenge for Auburn to see how they do this week against a team like Arkansas. Can they keep it up? Can they keep rolling with that success that they have? Or are they a little bit a product of the schedule? You know, they've beaten West Virginia out of the Big East, a solid team, not a great team, a team that has some talented players, but at the same time plays very, very sloppy football. They're Colorado hang around a couple last Thursday, I should say, a week ago, because of their sloppy play. You know, they beat Tennessee, you know, which is a solid win. They went at Tennessee. Basically, if you want to look at it in a positive light, they did exactly what Florida did, so we can give them props for that. But, you know, at the same time, it's unclear how good, in fact, are the Tennessee Vols, who are still looking for their first win in conference play. So, you know, I think we're going to learn a lot about the Auburn Tigers. It's funny, I was talking to Senderic Marks last week. If you download our newsletter and get our newsletter, College Football Insiders, we had a piece on Coleman, the defensive end for Auburn. And Marks was we were talking about the current Auburn Tigers, and he was, you know, as much as he wanted to talk about his buddy Coleman and give me some insight to him, kept bringing up the offense and, you know, being like, wow, man, you know, we got an offense. We can score some points. And I was like, yeah, no more 6-3 victories. He's like, 6-3? How about 3-2? And I forgot about the game they won last year against Mississippi State, 3-2. You know, sounds like a good pitching duel on the diamond, not a football score, but that's in fact what the score was. 3-2, they beat Mississippi State last year. And you know, he was basically saying, hey, where was that offense when I was there at Auburn, you know, when the defense basically had to carry them the last couple of years? Suddenly Auburn's exploded on the scene, putting up some big-time points. So it'll be fun to see if Auburn's joining in the, you know, that SEC mix in terms of being a contender. Could they be a sleeper in the SEC West? Everybody thought the sleeper might be Ole Miss, who's got a big game this week against Alabama, that Ole Miss could be the team that challenges Alabama, that challenges LSU, you know, the teams that have kind of been in control of the SEC West of late. But could it in fact be the Auburn Tigers that jump into the mix and maybe be the sleeper in that conference? You know, that'll be interesting to see. It makes that West a difficult conference. Right now, the West looks a lot more powerful than the East, with Georgia dropping their second game, with Tennessee still trying to find themselves. You got Kentucky, you got Vandy. They're solid teams. They're okay teams, nothing special. So outside of the Gators, it's really been dominated this season by the play of the SEC West. Now let's take a look at the BCS Busters and how they're doing. My man Rick Saratella sent me a little note and going over this week's newsletter saying, man, there's no way Boise is better than Cincinnati, because I got Boise ranked number 10 and Cincinnati ranked number 11. I'm not necessarily disagreeing with my man Rick, because I think if they faced head-to-head, Cincinnati would win. And I think ultimately if Cincinnati continues to win and they have a similar record or the same record, that they'll probably vault Boise State. And I think that's an interesting kind of juxtaposition for these mid-major type teams, for these BCS Buster type teams. It's difficult for them to hang and maintain their level of ranking. You know, they can get a big win early on in the season, but can you maintain that? Can you maintain that when you're playing at, you know, UC Davis, when your next big out-of-conference game is at Tulsa? Is that going to get the voters excited? Is that going to get the computers excited? I don't want to know what gets the computers excited, but you get my point. It's difficult for those teams to maintain that, even if they stay undefeated. We saw Houston last week got knocked off by a UTEP team in a stunning loss to me, giving up, you know, 50-something points to a team that had been held, you know, but with 7 points to Texas. 7 points, I can't recall who they played now off the top of my head. They played another decent team. and they were held to 7 points, and then they exploded for 58 against Houston. That, to me, knocked the Cougars right out of the rankings. You can't lose to that type of program and continue to remain ranked. But, you know, the other challengers there are Boise, who remains ranked, and TCU, who is number 12 in our poll, 9 in the coaches, 10 in the AP, and then our third-ranked team from the BCS Busters, the BYU Cougars, also of the Mountain West. Now, you can make a case that one of these Mountain West schools can have one loss and maybe be better than Boise. I think TCU is really the team to focus on right now. I believe they have home games against both BYU and Utah. I'm sure they have a home game against Utah because Utah must play at TCU and at BYU. So I think TCU, with their defense, they're the one team that really, I think, among all the BCS Buster schools, can challenge a BCS conference team. They could play. They're the closest to playing at that level. Even though I only have them at 12, I think because at this point in the season, you got to give Boise kudos for their big win against Oregon. All right, speaking of BCS Busters, on the line we have somebody from a BCS Buster program, Mr. Tim Hiller out of Western Michigan. Tim, how's it going today?
Going well. How are you?
Pretty good. I'm glad you were able to join us. You know, as I said earlier, you guys are off a little bit, you know, to a rough start, 2-3. Talk about your season to this point and how you feel you guys have done and what you can do to be better.
Well, I mean, obviously it isn't exactly what we wanted. And, you know, I think the key at this point is everybody's got to focus on getting back to fundamentals and doing their job. You know, we're at a point now, unfortunately, where we put ourselves in a situation where there isn't a lot of margin for error in MAC play. And in order to get where we want to get, we've got to play well each and every week. And, you know, last week, obviously it starts with me, you know, I think as the quarterback. I mean, the whole system is put on as far as checks and different things. And, you know, obviously we all have to do our job, all 11 guys, but you know, I want to take responsibility foremost for that. And so I've got to put that.
Now, yeah, obviously the most important stat is the wins and losses, but you've put up some pretty impressive numbers in your career at Western Michigan, 1,231 yards and 8 touchdowns this season. For your career, 9,300 yards, 84 touchdowns. You'll probably break that 100-touchdown barrier. What is it about the MAC that produces a lot of good quarterbacks? Did you have that in mind at all when you decided to go to Western?
You know, I mean, I did, but I think, you know, the overall reason I ended up picking Western is just it was the best fit at the best time, and Coach Cubitt was probably by far the most honest with all the schools that recruited me. He was honest with his plan for me and what he wanted to do with me as far as playing the position. But I think in our league, you know, you look at a lot of the offenses are pass-oriented, and I know in our system, I mean, everything is put on the quarterback from run checks to protection checks to getting us in better plays and recognizing the defense and, you know, have the ability to get in and out of any play. And I think quarterbacks in our league have a lot of responsibility placed on them. And so what that does is that forces you to prepare well each and every week, forces you to read defenses and understand what's going on outside of the ball. And when you put that together, you're a number of good players in the conference. And it's been that each and every year between, you know, guys like Drew Willey at Buffalo and Dan Fever at Central and Nate Davis at Ball State and Andy Schmidt at Eastern. And I could go on and forgetting some guys that are all tremendous players, put up great numbers every year because of that type of responsibility that's placed on the quarterback.
Now, you said Coach was honest and the most honest in the recruiting process. What can you explain that a little more? What do you mean by that?
I definitely think, you know, if he said he was going to call me on a Tuesday night at 8 o'clock, he called me Tuesday at 7:59. You know, he came up and recruited me some at Stanford, and when he got the job, there was a transition here my senior year of high school, and he came in here and you know, offered me a scholarship, and when I took my visit, he had a whole plan outlined for me of where he saw me each year, and it hasn't gone quite according to plan because I ended up, you know, playing as a freshman instead of redshirting and then got hurt and redshirted the next year, but he did what he said he was going to do when he said he was going to do it, and he had a plan ready for me, you know, to use me and to build the offense around me, and, you know, it was just the right opportunity at the right time.
I spoke to one of the other MAC quarterbacks you mentioned, Dan LeFever, yesterday. You guys are going to be going head-to-head, not this week, but the following week. And he mentioned one of the reasons he chose Central was he thought he could play early on. Did that factor in at all in your decision to go to a MAC school?
It, No, it did. I mean, I was recruited by some bigger schools, and not many of them ended up offering in the end, and Western ended up being the best opportunity, and you know, coach's plan for me was to redshirt and then compete for the job, and I think that's attractive for anyone, and the, also the opportunity to play in an offense that's pass-oriented and that allows the quarterback to do some audibling and different things with the line of scrimmage. I mean, those things are all attractive, I think, to any quarterback coming out of high school, and you know, we have a great offense, a great system here, and it's fun to play in.
Now, Dan mentioned you guys met briefly at the, I guess, the spring meeting or the summer meeting. But he said you were a nice guy, but you guys didn't exchange numbers or anything. So, you know, do you typically try not to be too friendly with the opposition? Are you old school that way?
You know, it's hard at those media day things. I mean, it's kind of awkward. You know, they put you in a position where, you know, the media wants to pit one guy against another and different things. I mean, Dan's a great player. He is a great leader. You know, I've seen him play year after year. He puts up tremendous numbers with, you know, running the ball as well as throwing it. And it's obvious that, you know, he is the leader of that team. And you know, he's a very nice guy. I got to meet him. And there's a ton of mutual respect there between both of us. And, you know, it's a big rivalry, Central versus Western. But, you know, it's hard. You know, I don't have any anxieties or anything against anybody in the league, you know, whatever school they're from. And, you know, I've developed some friendships with guys on other teams, you know, so it's not that way at all. I mean, Dan and I have a lot of respect for each other, and he's a great player.
Do you follow at all how other, you know, not even just quarterbacks, but just other MAC teams do, like when Central upsets Michigan State? Is part of you kind of cheer for that?
You know, it's great for the conference. You know, you like to see other teams in the league do well when we play BCS opponents, right? You know, and it speaks volumes about the conference and the progress that MAC football's made, and we play a great brand of football. It's tough every week in and week out, and there's a pretty across the conference just because there's so many good teams that are evenly matched, and yeah, it's great for the league when that stuff happens. You know, I mean, I'm so busy, I don't have time to, you know, follow everybody's record and everybody's statistics, but, you know, when something like that happens, we definitely take notes.
All right, and talk a little bit about this week's game against Toledo. How big is that game for your program?
It's huge, and I think where we're at right now as a team, it's to this point, the most important week of the season. We've got to play well this week. We've had a great week of practice. As much focus and effort and a desire to get better that I've seen thus far, and that's going to, you know, pay dividends. But at the same time, you know, we've given ourselves a chance, but if we don't capitalize on Saturday, it doesn't mean anything. So we've got to come out Saturday, set the tone quickly, offensively and defensively, and we've got to play really well. And it's a tough environment to play in. And, you know, we've got Coach Beckman, got a new coach down there. They've got a defense that does a lot of different things scheme-wise, and it's going to be a tough atmosphere to play in. But we're going to be up to the challenge, and then we're going to put our best effort forth on Saturday.
Now, a lot of people like to say that, you know, a quarterback's best friend is a good running game, and you have a pretty good running back there in Brandon West, who's rushed for 381 yards already this season. Tell us a little bit about him and how that does impact the play of the quarterback when the other team does have to worry about a running game.
Absolutely. You're absolutely right. I think a balanced attack is always the best way to approach a game. And you know, we try to do that as much as possible. And it's Brandon and it's the offensive line. I mean, you mentioned Brandon. He's a great player. The reason he's such a great player is his versatility, you know, whether it's returning kickoffs or punts, whether it's catching the ball, which he does well, or, you know, even in pass protection. I mean, people forget that the back plays a key role in protecting the quarterback, and so that's huge. And then, you know, obviously running the ball, we know what type of skills he has there. He's a great player. That's great to have him. And then, obviously, you know, it all starts with the offensive line for me and for Brandon. You know, they're doing a great job, and they're getting better.
All right, Tim, before we let you go, we like to close things out with a segment we call Three and Out. So first down, can you let us know, so far, who's the toughest defender you faced?
Wow, that's a great question. I would probably have to say, you know, last year we played an Illinois team that was pretty darn good, and they had a corner who's playing for, the Saints now, Vontae Davis, and he was a great player.
All right, second down. On game day, what do you like to listen to on your iPod?
Honestly, I'm not a big iPod guy. You know, I study the playbook hard, I get in that a lot, and then once I get to the stadium, just really try to, you know, clear my mind and focus on the game. So I really don't listen to music before the game.
No music at all?
No, I don't.
All right. And third down, I believe, I hope I'm right. I believe when we spoke last year, you said that Bobby Knight and Smucker still ranks ahead of you in Orville, Ohio. Is that right?
That's true.
Have you made up any ground?
You have to ask everyone back home. In my own mind, I'd say no. Bobby Knight's one of the greatest basketball coaches has ever coached. So I'd say he's probably still the most famous person from Orville.
All right, maybe next year when you're playing on Sundays, your fame will move up a little bit up the rankings.
Hey, we'll see what happens. That'd be great.
All right, Tim, thanks a lot for joining us, and good luck Saturday in that big game at Toledo.
All right, thanks. My pleasure.
All right, that was quarterback Tim Hiller of Western Michigan. As I said, one of the better quarterbacks in college football. The MAC produces a lot of these quarterbacks. Don't sleep on them, and you know he'll be up there in the NFL draft next season. All right, you're listening to College Football Insiders Radio. I'm your host, Daniel Moglione. And coming up now will be an interview with Desmond Howard. But don't forget, go to NFLDraftBible.com. Check out all the info we have there. Go to Twitter, /CFBInsiders. Sign up for our, you know, become a follower on our Twitter. Get all the latest news in college football coming out from us. As well as, don't forget, go to www.fsc.fm. I'm going to get it right every time this week for everything fantasy sports channel related. And after following the interview with Desmond, we will have calling in Super Scout Kelvon Sykes to talk about this week's games. Welcome to another College Football Insiders edition of From the Press Box. With me today is Desmond Howard, former Heisman Trophy winner, as well as Super Bowl MVP. You can watch him now every Saturday morning on ESPN's Game Day, and I like to call him the Cape Crusader now. Hey, Desmond, how's it going today?
It's going good. How are you doing?
Pretty good, pretty good. So first off, let me ask, can I get that cape in maize and blue? And I'm a big guy. I may need double X. Do they go up that high?
I think we can outfit you in one. Yeah, I think we can get one for you.
Perfect, perfect. Now, before we even get to, you know, today's football talk, I got to admit, you know, as a kid, one of my favorite all-time plays growing up here in New York City watching college football was that 4th-and-1 play when you made that diving catch in the back of the end zone with Elvis Gerback. I mean, how cool was that play for you as a player? And it was like, you know, the atypical Michigan play. You know, you think of Michigan football, you know, run it up the middle, get the play that way, and to throw a bomb in the end zone was just, you know, thrilling, and it must have been, you know, a thrill for you.
Yeah, you know, it was fantastic to be able to come up with that play when we needed it. You know, at that point, Notre Dame was a thorn in our side, and we wanted to get over that hump. You know, they beat us in you know, some close games, and you know, it was always great competition going up against the Fighting Irish. So to be put in that position where it's 4th-and-1, and you know, and Gary Moeller, who was the head coach at that time, pretty much gave us the option to even pass the ball. I mean, normally it wouldn't even be an option. It's just like, okay, where are we going to run this ball? This 1 yard gets the first down. But
right.
So you had enough confidence in Elvis Gerback, the quarterback, and myself to say, hey, you know, if you see something else, you know, don't be afraid to check out the audible or what have you. So, you know, that went a long way, you know, and I think it paid big dividends for him and for us. And, you know, it's something that you do in the heat of the action. I mean, you know, I didn't think, hey, I'm about to lay parallel to the ground and catch this ball at my fingertips, but it's a matter of just doing it in the heat of action, and then afterwards you really realize how significant and special it was.
Yeah, I mean, I know the play that always gets replayed the most is probably the one against Ohio State when you struck the pose, but for me, you know, watching football that year, that's the one that stands out to me, was that 4th-down play. Something tells me that Bo wouldn't have given Elvis that option.
I seriously doubt that, you know. He may have been watching the way. I know he was watching that play. When he watched it, he was probably saying, what are they doing? Yeah, great play. You know what I mean? So, you know, you see the quarterback, you know, put his arm in motion and throw the ball. And fourth and one, he's like, are you kidding me? And as the ball is released and I finally bring it in, you see the official's arms raised and the signal of a touchdown. I was like, great call, great play, boot everybody.
Now, you know, speaking of Michigan football and kind of getting away from the Bo Schembechler style of playing and the Bo Schembechler, you know, tree, tell us a little bit about, you know, your Wolverines, today's Wolverines, with Rich Rodriguez, the spread offense, 4-1 star, tough loss on Saturday. You know, Tate the magic man, you know, may the 4CA be with you, whatever nickname you want to use for him, seems to be bringing this program back in the right direction. What do you think of your Wolverines right now?
Yeah, you know, I think that they've had a fantastic start. Obviously, they won all their home games, a huge game at home against Notre Dame, and went on the road and came up short. You know, there are things that I see on the field that I like, and there are things that I see on the field that I dislike. You know, so you know, but they're a young team, still trying to feel their way through this college football season. So there're going to be some bumps in the road. They're expected, and we'll see how they handle them. But, you know, so far 4-1, I know there are a lot of teams in college football, even in the Big Ten, who would love to be 4-1 right now.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think this year is a big transition-type season. It's funny because heading into the year, if you had predicted 8-4, 9-3 for Michigan, people would have thought, wow, you think they can really be that good. But, you know, being a Michigan player, I mean – you know, 8-4, 9-3, that they're not really happy with that either. I know coming off last season it seems like a good year, but that, you know, the typical goals are loftier than that.
Yeah, but like you said, coming off of last season, known as a rebuilding year, they're still trying to get the pieces in. You have to be patient because, like you said, it's such a total overhaul of what we're used to in Ann Arbor that, you know, that type of transition doesn't happen overnight. So, I mean, you know, if you understand the game, then you're patient. If you don't understand the game, then you're impatient, and you know you want to, you know, an 11-1 season, what have you. But you know, someone asked me about the game last week and how disappointed I was. I said, well, I mean, I didn't expect them to go undefeated, so
right.
You know, just, you know, I wish they would have won, of course, but it is what it is. They're going to lose games this year, so I mean, I had no misconception that this team was going to go undefeated and run the tables this season. So it's just a matter of how they play and how they execute on the field. And I think that's been the most eye-opening thing compared to last season. You know, last season they didn't have the key people in the key positions, especially the quarterback position, to make it happen. Where a year later, even though Tate's a true freshman, you see what can happen when you get the right guy in the right system that's able to run it correctly. And so that's what we're experiencing this year so far.
Yeah, I agree. I think a couple of guys have showed the football world, for people who kind of underplay the importance of the quarterback position, what one player can make a difference to an entire program. We're seeing that with Michigan and Tate Forcier. And I think we're also seeing it, you know, to a team that maybe isn't as close to your heart, but closer to where you are now, the Miami Hurricanes and Ja'Cory Harrison. What a difference he's made. That team hasn't had a big-time player at quarterback since Ken Dorsey, probably. And you know, talk about the impact of Ja'Cory Harris there in Miami, another program trying to find its way back to greatness. Outstanding 3-1 start, and probably their biggest win last week, defeating the top 10 Oklahoma Sooners.
Yeah, you know, the big addition to the Miami Hurricanes this season came during the offseason when Randy Shannon hired two coordinators. He got a new defensive coordinator, John Lovett. I think the defense is playing well, not as well as they as we're accustomed to Miami defense playing, but I think they're getting there. You know, they're playing well enough, obviously, to win these games. And then you have Mark Whipple, who's the offensive coordinator. He came with the philosophy and a game plan that really suits the talent that Miami has. So Ja'Cory is a heck of a talent. He's a young guy, sophomore. You know, the thing that Randy Shannon did last season that I thought was very, very smart was he played a lot of these young guys. He played them in all the, you know, in all their games. And I remember going up to Gainesville, and Miami played Florida, and all these young guys were playing. You know, and they were out there competing, and people don't understand. I mean, that game was very, very close for at least three quarters. They had a couple of questionable calls that went the Gators' way, and then they kind of ran away with it in the fourth quarter. But when you look at the Miami Hurricanes from a competitive standpoint, those young kids got a lot valuable game time experience. So now they're not overwhelmed, they're not intimidated by anything. And so now they can just go out there and play. But now you, and then at the same time, you put the right mind with that talent. The way that Mark Whipple is calling these plays, to me it's just fantastic. And he's allowing Jacory Harris to do what he does best, which is throw the ball and utilize all his weapons. I mean, you look at guys like Travis Benjamin, who can just stretch the field. I mean, he's as fast as they come. You have another guy, Laron Bird, very reliable possession receiver, but can also get down the field too. They have two fantastic tight ends. Dedrick Epps is a good blocker, but also a good receiving tight end. You got the tailbacks. You have Greg Cooper and Javaris James, both very good runners in between the tackles, on the outside, and excellent receivers out the backfield. So he's just picking defenses apart with all these weapons he got. And Mark Whipple, he's calling some fantastic games so far.
We're talking to Desmond Howard of ESPN's Game Day. Of course, most of you knew him already as the Heisman Trophy winner coming out of Michigan, Super Bowl MVP with the Green Bay Packers. Des, talk about Game Day a little bit first before we go into this week's upcoming game. How unique was last week's Game Day? Going to Boston College, a couple people kind of asked me, hey, how come they're going to Boston College? And obviously a major reason was, beyond the guys on the field, was Mark Herzlick. A guy who was, ACC Defensive Player of the Year last year. Phenomenal story, recovering from cancer. What was that like compared to the typical game day?
It was great. It was great, like you said earlier. People asked you, they also asked me about going up to Boston College. And obviously Florida State had just came off of a demoralizing loss to South Florida. And Wake Forest, they just barely squeaked past. BC just barely squeaked past Wake Forest with the field going overtime the previous week. So it's like, we got bigger games to go to. But you got to tell people sometimes that things that are bigger than the game. And this was a story that was bigger than the game. Fans were fantastic. It was raining. They still came out. It was a great scene, and it was an excellent show.
All right. And how about this week's game? This week you definitely have a big game. Two SEC foes, both undefeated, both ranked in the top five. Florida going down to LSU. You have any insight in for us? Is Tim Tebow playing?
No, that's a million-dollar question. What everyone wants to know. So we'll see.
And what do you expect to see on Saturday from these two clubs? Both are undefeated, but I think to some extent we haven't seen either team play their best football just yet.
Yeah, you're right. And you really haven't seen the Florida Gators play against anybody who's worth mentioning, to be honest with you. Who have they played against that has pushed them to the limit? I think they had Charleston Southern, and they played Troy, and they had the big matchup that everyone was waiting for against Tennessee in the Swamp. And, that was pretty much like a lackluster performance. It wasn't like people expected them to dominate Tennessee, and they definitely didn't dominate Tennessee. And then obviously they had the game against Kentucky, in Lexington, where Tim Tebow got knocked out. So they really haven't played anybody worth mentioning to really test them, in my opinion. They haven't played any ranked teams to really test them, and this will be their first true test, and it's on the road. And look at LSU, and obviously they played a lot of close games. They went on the road, played Washington, and you think, okay, this is Washington. But then Washington later on beat USC, in Washington. So you can't take them too lightly. They just went on the road in South Bend and took Notre Dame in overtime. So, they did play them on the road. They beat them. It wasn't a great performance, but they came away with the win, first game of the season. And then last week, played a very tough SEC foe, the Georgia Bulldogs, in between the hedges, and came over to victory. So I think, they've been tested a little more than the Gators have at this point.
Sounds like you're leaning a little towards LSU, but I won't ask you for a pick. I'll let the listeners tune in on ESPN on Saturday to find out who you and your cohorts are picking. Dez, we like to close things out with a segment we call Three and Out with three quick hitting first, you know, questions. So first down, you've taken a lot of heat, I think, going on the road, you know, places to like Ohio State. So do you get more heat when you were a player going to these college stadiums or now as an analyst?
As an analyst. Because I think as a player, you just kind of not, you know, pay attention to it. You can block it out because you're so focused on what you're doing on the field.
All right. Second down. Typically, we ask the guys what they listen to on their iPod on game day. When you were a college football player, what apparatus did you use to listen to music?
And one of those portable CD players. That's why what I use to listen to music before a game.
All right. And third down, Monday Night Football, Brett Favre versus the Green Bay Packers. Who did you root for, your former quarterback or your former team?
You know, I kind of just root for players, and I want to see a good game. I want to see a better game. You know, I like Brett. Brett's my favorite quarterback. I won a Super Bowl with him, so, you know, he's one of my favorites. But then Charles Woodson plays for Green Bay. That's my guy. You know, he's a Michigan guy, former Heisman Trophy winner, too, so we're in the same Heisman fraternity. So I just like a good game, and I root for players.
All right, Desmond, thanks a lot for joining us and giving us some time.
No, anytime. My pleasure.
All right, that was Mr. Desmond Howard, the Heisman Trophy winner from Michigan. You can see him this Saturday at game day. He will be in Baton Rouge for the big game between the LSU Tigers and the Florida Gators. And joining me to talk about that game as well as other big games this weekend is Mr. Kelron Sykes, our Super Scout. Hey, Kelron, what's up, man? How's it going?
Hey, what's going on?
Everything's going good. Thursday night, we got football tonight. We got football tomorrow. We got football on Saturday. I'm ready to rock and roll. How about you?
All right, great college weekend. You got some big games with the Florida game, obviously Florida and LSU and Alabama and Ole Miss. So some great games this weekend. Look forward to it.
All right, let's start with that Florida-LSU game. You know, two of the more talented teams in the country, obviously a couple of teams undefeated, teams that are ranked in the top five national championship contenders. What's your take on this whole Tim Tebow situation? I mean, you know, obviously we're all dealing with limited information. We're not really sure how healthy he is, what the deal is, but, you know, from an outsider's perspective to some extent, what's your take on whether he should play? And if he does play, how's it going to affect how he plays? He's been running the ball a lot this year, and he's kind of a barreling runner. I'm not sure if you want him doing that this fresh off a concussion.
Well, obviously that's the million-dollar question is, you know, his health going into Saturday's game versus LSU. And as you just mentioned, I mean, Florida's been using him as a battering ram, you know, for his last 3 years in college. But it's going to be interesting just from a defensive perspective how LSU prepares for this game. I mean, you know, we don't know, obviously, the status of Tebow for Saturday, so the game plan for LSU is kind of intriguing. You know, are we going to put eight in the box or, you know, are we going to zone blitz? How are we going to manage this game, you know, versus this Florida offense? So it's going to be interesting to see Saturday.
Yeah, this Florida offense will be interesting to see how they go if Tebow doesn't or if he does and they have to tweak what they do. You know what I mean? So how does that, you know, if Tebow's not a big running threat, how do you think that impacts guys like Dempsey, Rainey, and Moody?
Oh, big time. One guy in particular who I foresee having a great game is Chad Jones, a strong safety from LSU. Expect him to have a huge game. I've been in love with this guy for the last 2 years, especially coming out of high school, intriguingly. He's a phenomenal athlete, but it's going to be interesting to see what kind of, you know, once again, what LSU does defensively versus Florida. Obviously, the other playmakers on Florida, obviously, you know, Hernandez, the tight end, he needs to step up big time this way. Rainey and the rest of the tailback committee needs to step up big time this weekend for Florida to be successful.
How much do they miss the two guys that are in the NFL right now, Harvin and Lewis Murphy, on the outside as receivers?
Oh, huge. I mean, those two guys are huge. But, you know, that's what Urban Meyer does. You know, two leaves, two more. You know, they got two five-star recruits waiting in the wing. I mean, that's just the production status of what Florida does. I mean, you know, they're in the same situation as what SC does. You know, guys leave and they just recycle guys. They recycle first-rounders. That's just what the prestigiousness of that school does. So, once again, it's going to be an interesting matchup. This weekend is going to be about matchups. And I think whoever does not create or does not have the most turnovers obviously win again this weekend.
Well, yeah, let me throw a couple of matchups in that game specifically. I think one that scouts are going to be watching a lot is going to be the tackle Saron Black, particularly when he matches up with Carlos Dunlap, that freakish, you know, defensive end.
Yeah.
I mean, he's like 290 pounds, but he moves like a quick defensive end.
Yeah, he's sort of in that Javon Curse range with long, freakish legs, long arms, and extremely quick bursts off the ball. Black is also, you know, he's a great, phenomenal athlete, so it's going to be interesting matchups across the board. Joe Hayden, you know, versus LaFell this week. You know, you got first-rounders versus first-rounders throughout that game and throughout each position, so it's going to be a phenomenal game to watch.
And another matchup that I'm looking forward to seeing, it's not really that head-to-head, like DN versus tackle, wide receiver versus corner, but I can't wait to see my man Charles Scott, we like to call him Chuck the Truck, go up against Brandon Spikes in the open field. Those guys like some smash mouth football.
Yeah, Spikes is definitely a downhill thumper. And once again, I'm getting excited right now just thinking about the matchups and thinking about some of these guys who we all be seeing, you know, next fall in the NFL. And, you know, Spikes obviously is a first rounder. Scott is, you know, a mid to late guy. You know, it's kind of early to determine his status as of right now. But, you know, those matchups across the board is very, very intriguing. And, you know, every scout within that region to be at that game. And it's going to be exciting to see.
All right, let's move on to another game, staying in the SEC, staying with another top five team in the conference. That's Alabama against a team that used to be a top five team until it got dropped by South Carolina, Ole Miss. How big is this game for Jevon Snead, for him to bounce back? It's not going to be an easy opponent to do it against, but you know, how much can he recoup from his slow start with a big game against Alabama?
Yeah, his last televised game wasn't too well. I think he threw four picks or something like that. This is a huge bounce back game for him, and just not for himself, but for his team, and also for his future draft status, because you know there's some rumblings that he may come out this year. Nevertheless, it's a huge bounce back game for him, but you know he's going against a stubborn defense led by Terrence Cody and Rolando McClain from Alabama, and it's a tough week to bounce back for. I mean, so I wish him luck this weekend, but I wish him luck because Alabama's going to come with it this week. It's going to be – that's another interesting game. You know, you have key matchups across the board as well with Alabama. You know, another guy I like is Kareem Jackson. You know, what is he going to do versus, you know, Jevon Snead? So it's interesting. Looking forward to it.
And, you know, against Dexter McCluster too, that all-purpose running back they have. But, yeah, it's even with the loss of Dante Hightower, who I think, you know, is phenomenal, and you can't downplay that loss, but this Alabama defense is really up to as good as anybody. Before we move on from this game, you know, you got a pick for us there?
Oh, Alabama big. I one thing I learned not to do, not pick against Alabama early, only pick against them late versus when they play Florida.
and speaking of that matchup, they you know, that's the game we're all expecting to see in the SEC championship game. But which team you think has a better defense? I think it would be hard to argue for anybody else. In terms of the top defense, which team has the better defense, Alabama or Florida?
Oh, that's a tough one to say. I think both defenses, you know, they possess great talent across the board. But just the overall speed, I'll have to give a nod to Florida. I mean, you know, you got guys 4-4, 4-5 across the board from the front seven on back to the back four. And I definitely give the edge to Urban Meyer's defensive crew. I mean, Dunlap, you know, those guys are phenomenal in the box. Obviously, you know, Terrence Cody, you know, and McClain and those guys are phenomenal as well. But just overall team speed, I would have to go with Florida.
All right, staying in the SEC, we got Auburn visiting Arkansas. Auburn is 5-0 in 25 again after starting the season unranked. Arkansas is 0-2 in conference play, but, you know, they've played some tough conference opponents. It's not like they've played patsies. They lost to Alabama. That's nothing wrong with that. So Arkansas, and they lost to Georgia on the road. So
yeah. They've
had a tough start. What do you think about Ryan Mallett and what he could do against this Auburn defense?
Well, Ryan Mallett's done the transfer from Michigan. He's got to play pretty well this season. It's going to be interesting to see what he does versus that Auburn defense. You're looking at maybe third or fourth place teams fighting for a lower tier bowl this weekend. But it should be a good matchup. I like Ryan Mallett, what he did before he got to Arkansas. And I expect him to have a great game this week.
And two more teams that could be scrapping and fighting for bowls. You know, Tennessee is only 2-3. They don't want to drop another game under 500. And while Georgia figures to be a bowl team, they don't want to fall to 3-3. Those two teams play against each other. I mean, it's kind of weird to see a Georgia-Tennessee game kind of be the fourth biggest SEC game on a given Saturday. I think it's the first time in you know, about 30 years or so or more that they play where neither team was ranked. How much fun is it going to be to watch A.J. Green and Eric Berry be on the field at the same time?
It's going to be a great matchup. You know, Eric Berry is maybe the second, you know, behind Taylor May safety in the country right now, if not the best safety. But also Georgia has their safety too. Rashad Jones also is a downhill thumper, probably a little bit more rangier in open space than Berry is. But, you know, it's going to be a great matchup. Green is, wow, he's, you know, besides Julio Jones, I can't name, you know, a younger guy, you know, that is better than playing in A.J. Green right now. I mean, he's a phenomenal athlete, but like I said, you're talking about two teams that, you know, are bottom-tier teams in the SEC, unfortunately. That's kind of sad to say, you know, in terms of the history of both programs and the prestigiousness of both programs. But, you know, I think Tennessee and Lane Kiffin, he has that program in the right direction. And give him a couple of recruiting classes, you know, they get that thing turned around in SEC. But I fully expect Tennessee to come out, you know, good victory this weekend versus Georgia.
Yeah, that would be a huge win for them. And, I mean, as far as A.J. Green, man, I you can make the case, in my opinion, he might be the best receiver in the country regardless of class. And I just love Berry's instincts. You know, he's not going to wow you with his size like a guy like Taylor Mays does. And he's probably not as athletic as either Chad Jones or the safety from Georgia. His name is escaping me right now. The second, you know, he's probably not as athletic as those guys, but it's unbelievable how this kid makes plays. I mean, in 2 years, he almost set the interception return record for NCAA football in just 2 seasons. You know?
Yeah, he's just a playmaker. I mean, he's the epitome of what a football player is. You know, put on the pass, put the helmet on, I'm gonna go make plays. Great team player, great off the field guy, and you know, expect him to be a high draft pick this fall, this spring. I'm sorry.
All right, we're winding down on the show, so before we let you go, we got a couple of Big Ten games that also people will be tuning in on ABC. For those people that maybe, you know, CBS gets knocked off on their satellite dish, they'll be checking out ABC at 8 o'clock. Michigan takes on Iowa. What do you think is going to happen here? You think Iowa is going to stay undefeated, or are the Wolverines going to come in and hand them their first loss?
Ooh, toss-up game. That's a 50-50 toss-up right there. Depends on who causes the most turnovers and who can create the matchups for this weekend. Iowa's been playing phenomenally for the first four games throughout the season. I fully expect Iowa to come out with a victory.
All right, how about we talked about the individual matchups before. I think a really interesting one here is Michigan defensive end Brandon Graham against Iowa tackle Brian Bulaga, who finally looks to be healthy.
Yeah, Brian's finally bounced back from that injury. He has probably the top junior offensive lineman in the country right now. And Graham is kind of a freakish guy in terms of his – well, not freakish, but in the mold of a, you know, of a smaller defensive end, maybe about 6'1", 6'2", but a phenomenal first step, quick off the ball, great explosion, and great hands. So it's going to be a good matchup between Brian and Graham this weekend.
All right, how about one more? ABC again, Wisconsin, Ohio State. Badgers also undefeated. Are the Badgers real?
No. Wisconsin has done this every other year. I've jumped off that Wisconsin bandwagon. They've done this every other year. You know, when they played Penn State or when they played Ohio State, it's been a thumping. Terrell Pryor, expect him to have huge numbers this weekend. Go Buckeyes.
So you like the progress Pryor has shown since that disappointing game against USC?
Yeah, I mean, you know, he was a project as it was, you know, prior to the SC game, in terms of his mechanics and whatnot. He's a great athlete, but you know, he has to slow down and let the game kind of slow down and come to a steady pace for him. I mean, he's not an exceptional thrower. You know, obviously he's great on the edges in terms of running the ball and whatnot, but his pocket presence needs to develop, and his field awareness needs to develop. And slowly but surely, Pryor's getting there.
All right, Kyle, I'm looking forward to talking to you again next Thursday.
Good deal. Thanks for having me.
All right, anytime. That's Kelron Sykes, our Super Scout. Don't forget to go to NFLDraftBible.com. Check out all our interviews. We have audio interviews with Dan LeFever as well as Cameron Hayward from Ohio State. Go to Twitter/FCFB Insiders as well as www.fsc.fm.